This is Neon Coltrane with Elise Osborne. Hello, children. Welcome to another run of this Neon Coltrane magic carpet broom ride, broom for magic carpets, enchants itself on the fibers of the broom as it's being beaten out, shaking all the pixie dust on a low-hanging branch of a witch's tree. That was just some jazz for you. I don't know if you enjoy that, but I certainly did. Okay, so this next episode is going to be exclusively beat poetry. Just kidding. You got really excited for a second, didn't you? Just a little, another one of my tricks. I don't know why I feel so tricky right now, but I think maybe it's because I've interviewed another podcaster, so it's two for the price of one listen. So this is going to be not the best audio quality, but that's, I'm sure, what you've come to expect here at Neon Coltrane. A phone call with another podcast creator, and welcome to the enjoyment of us going on about what she does and how we feel about magic. And also, if you would like to contribute or be a guest on Neon Coltrane, go ahead and hit me an email at elise@neoncoltrane.world. And yeah, or find me on Instagram at Elise Osborne, ALESEOSBORN. And I'm sure if you have any interest in being on here, odds are pretty high that you'll get in here. So enjoy the show.
Hello.
Hello, Bree Sikorsky. This is Elise Osborne. So this is Neon Coltrane, and thank you for coming on to my podcast. And you have a podcast called Open Magic, where you talk to a bunch of different magic practitioners, and you're talking about doing oral histories with people. So what does that mean?
Yeah, so oral history is a methodology that's been used by a lot of historians, basically centered around the idea that it isn't just famous people who make history, but that actually we can learn a lot about history and movements and a variety of topics from everyday people, and it's a very much like a grassroots and bottom-up approach to history. And it's by going and working with interviewees to discuss their experience through anything from the civil rights movement to women's movements to witchcraft, and hearing about their experiences, their ideology, the people they've worked with, to really be able to get not only an understanding of like the factual history, but the meanings it's held for different communities.
So you're interviewing old people.
Not just old people, but I think a lot of the interviewees do end up, and a lot of the narrators end up being a bit older, but they can be of any age, is what I found.
Oh, cool. So you have this idea of also making magic accessible, and I want to know more about what you define as magic, like what that word and concept means.
That's such a great question, and it's actually a question that we also love to ask people on our podcast and just in my regular work. Personally, I think my working definition of magic has been that it is entering in dialogue with the universe, and that's very much, and it can be in so many forms, from, you know, just looking at plants on your walk and really trying to be intentional and engaging with it, to, you know, having a really big ritual or something like that. But regardless of almost the mode and methodology that you're using, it's being open to the idea that you have this wisdom within yourself to connect to life on a deeper level, and also as a means of self-reflection and actualization.
So you're thinking of it as more of like experiential than like result-oriented magic.
I think that's such a lovely way to put it. Absolutely.
Cute. Okay. So, I mean, like, I get that. I think that I like to think in some ways I feel like magic is like, where did that come from? You know, mm-hmm. Like, so I guess I think that people define it sort of differently. And like me, I'm like, oh, that's synchronistic. Like, that's kind of calling me forward. Mm-hmm. And then there could be something that's just like the weird timing of a car outside or whatever that you're like,
definitely.
Oh, I'm paying attention to this. And this is sort of guiding me. And then there's, to me, like a payoff later. Like, that's how I think of like,
mm-hmm.
But, the other side of that is, the payoff and whatever the big wow moment, I guess, is the yang aspect of what we're calling right. magic in this conversation. And then like the yin is like the experience. So, mm-hmm. I think a lot about magic and like cognitive psychology, you know, so we, or even behavioral, like we change our behaviors. We start to, I guess, behavioral, never mind. Okay. I'm just saying like, we're starting to like rewire our subconscious mm-hmm. through the practices we do. And like, we're constantly sending our subconscious a message.
Yeah.
There was an artist a long time ago that said, and I don't remember their name, they said, we think where we live. And I thought that was so annoying that I remembered it forever. And then later, I'm like, oh, that makes sense, you know?
Like, yeah.
We really do pick up all the cues from around our environments and start to educate, like, how we're going to continue in that environment. And we dream of it, and we, like, play and think around it. So you're saying magic has like an experience of noticing it and maybe deciding a different
Definitely.
Relationship with it.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's just that, it's almost kind of like a little bit like animism being brought into play,
yeah.
but it's just like that there it's beyond like the fact that like you're, you know, a singular like protagonist, like moving through life and like everything else is just like an object around you. But instead that like, there's this constant ability to have a conversation with your environment, and that it can then influence kind of what you're saying, like your own perceptions of the environment you're in, to even, you know, send signals to your subconscious and your conscious being.
Brie, where the hell did you get an idea like that? Like, where is that coming from? What got you into this?
That's actually a great question. I think a lot of it is that when I first started practicing magic, even though I would be at home, like alone, like, you know, practicing in a solitary manner, I felt like there was almost this pressure from a third person, like an outside observer, where I was like, well, if you don't do this thing right, and like, if you don't have this like amazing, you know, mind-blowing experience, then like, it's not real. And I was like, this feels so awful. Like, that's not what this is about. Like, this is supposed to be, not like for me necessarily, but is supposed to be an experience that I want to engage in. And so I started to think about like, okay, what would that look like for me? And I started to kind of like develop my own magical practice being much more about moving through life intentionally, and being open to like you were saying, the synchronicities and these like magical moments that happen when you're paying attention, and not that magic is simply like, I'm going to make this come into existence. Like, but if it doesn't happen, then I'm a failure. So
you're talking about really, like expansion of consciousness.
Absolutely.
So what was the first, magical, romance that you had? What was like the entry to the gates of hell, which is the damnation of the witch's soul that is your life?
Right. You know, it's really interesting. And this is actually something I've heard really reflected in my interviews that I've done with other folks as well, is that we, you know, there's this moment in our adult life that we have with magic where we're engaging with it intentionally again. But a lot of times it's kind of this return to the self, because as a child, I like played in the woods all the time, and I had like a very deep connection with the nature around me, and like especially the animals around me, which I really feel like was my first exposure to the sort of magic, and like being able to intuit like thoughts of animals, like here and there. But really, how I returned to it was, as I was a teenager, I feel like the gateway drug is like crystals. And I was like, oh, this is like so interesting.
Oh my God, for a second, I was thinking you were talking about crystal meth. And I'm like, why would she say that right now? It's interesting.
So as like a teenager, like I liked, you know, it's, I think, just such an easy thing where it's like, oh, okay, like I just need to have something, like I need this crystal for, I can get it. It's like a very easy process kind of from envisioning to obtaining.
Yeah.
And so that was like kind of how I first started that work. And then I would say a few years ago, I was like, you know what? Like I want to start actually, I think it was like when I was like processing a lot of emotions, I was like, how can I do this in a way that's like almost even outside of myself? And that's when I started just like reading more books and starting to getting into candle magic and sigils and things like that.
Oh, cool. And then you do astrology too. So what's your corner in astrology? Cause I feel like sometimes, you know, we have different focuses in astrology. And then astrologers also have different opinions about certain things. Like, for example, I've known some astrologers that believe that your moon will tell you what your past life experiences were, where others will say it's your south node. You know, there's a lot of different philosophies I feel like an astrologer will gain in like their practice.
Definitely. I think that those are such interesting points to bring up. So personally, what I am interested in, this is actually kind of like a recent evolution of myself in my own head, is that I've been spending a lot of time, you know, studying to be able to read charts. And then I was like, well, like, you know, thinking about where I wanted to go with this, I was like, but is like reading charts what you want to do? And I was like, in my head, I was like, no, that's like not what I'm really interested in.
Like personal charts.
Personal charts. And instead, what I have found personally enriching is my interest is in helping other folks basically understand astrology so that they can use it as a personal practice. And that doesn't even necessarily mean having them, like, you know, be able to completely decode their chart, you know, and read it for themselves, but just understanding the stories of, you know, the zodiac and the planets and the houses, so that it can be meaningful and provide insight to them.
What do you feel like is the handle on it? Like, what are, like, if you're explaining astrology to someone for their own uses, what do you think are like the fundamentals on that? They'll like help people get their feelers on it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that how people are most often introduced is through their sun sign, and so I think that. What, you know, kind of whether we like it or not, like that's the beginning moment for so many people. But from there, it's how I traditionally explain it to folks is that, you know, there are these houses that each are kind of like this room that each have its own individual purpose. And then we have these actors, which are the planets, and they're playing a particular, you know, playing with like a particular role, which is like the sign that they're in these rooms. And from each of these things that we have, kind of regardless of the traditional associations of each like zodiac sign, planet, etc., we have our own associations and experiences with each of those energies. And so from there, I think that so much, it's in a lot of ways, I think of it being almost similar to like the tarot sometimes, where it kind of beyond like, okay, like whether or not, like, you know, as the transits move through and as the planets move, like if that actually affects your life, at the very end of the day, I think it's so useful because it's a conversation starter with yourself. Kind of like when you draw a tarot card, just like, understand what's happening in your life, you can look to different aspects in your chart and be like, why am I responding this way to, like, you know, it's like, why is like my family life so fraught, or like, why am I so like concerned about what like my house is like, you know, or some aspect of your life that you might notice that you're responding very strongly to or have a lot of like feelings about, that you're able to look to your chart and it starts to introduce almost these like actors where you can look and see how it plays out and understand what is influencing your life in this way. And I think it leads to a greater level of self-reflection.
No, totally. It's like a vehicle. I always think of astrology, yeah. Especially to the haters who would not be listening to the show anyway, so we could say whatever we want about them. But, like, it's usually some dude, you know? And
right.
Mm-hmm. They're like, do you really believe in that? And I'm like, okay, well, right, it's... Right. It's an infinite game, and it kind of comes down to mm-hmm. how important is belief in, like, the infinite experience of this game of getting to know all these archetypal forces and all of these different yes. sets, and it's, like, constantly changing forever, these inner spinning wheels, and it's interesting to figure out how that relates to the current moment and where everything's shifted and how that relates to you or people around you or the government or whatever. It's really, right. It's really kind of mesmerizing just as like a focus. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's so funny because like the same person that'll say that is like obsessively playing a video game or watching a football game. And you're like, okay, because right. this isn't a game. Like, come on. Like,
Right. And I think it's really interesting that at least from like the literature I've seen in some ways, I feel like there's almost been this shift from like, you know, like a lot of like astrological tomes are from, you know, like the 80s, 90s. And in that time, I feel like a lot of energy was expended trying to like put the science behind it. Mm-hmm. And like, and here's the thing, like, yes, like, definitely there are, you know, the moon influences our tides, like, yes, we're made of water, all that's great, but, like, that doesn't personally, like, that's not what we're thinking about when we're having a deeply self-reflective experience. Like, we are not thinking about ourselves on this, like, cellular, microbial level. Like, that doesn't matter.
But maybe
like,
you're not. Like, sometimes...
Hey, that's true.
I do see what you're saying, and, like, the heat and the passion mm-hmm. of, like, human experience. But I think that...
right.
I mean, I think that science is a player... on the page, just like the rest of us, you know, like in the other ideas mm-hmm. that are out there. I don't think science is like the like Mac Daddy know it all that it is given homage to, but it is a part of it. And I mean, as like I have like Aquarius in the first house, and I have mm-hmm. Aquarius in Jupiter, so I kind of like a little bit of a chilly like step back and like look at it, and that makes me feel comforted to think of it kind of scientifically, you know. But I think that is like a medicine to like the goopy saturation of like confusing events, you know.
Right, yeah, for sure. And I think it's so great that there is literature on there, but I don't want, I'm thinking to like, you know, how people will say like, oh, but do you really believe in that? And it's kind of like, there is that scientific literature that I think it can be very comforting and like something to defer to in this like structured way, but also that beyond science, is the ability to consider, like you were saying, the human experience and, like, our lived experiences as well.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, like, I'm not an evangelical astrologer. Like, I don't, I feel like if someone's being an asshole, I'm like, you're just being an asshole. Like, there's nothing to prove to you because your whole point is to be condescending. So, the end of the conversation. I don't need to give you a pamphlet, you know? But I do mm-hmm. see what you're saying where, like, breaking it down scientifically is sort of just like one facet. It's not like the whole shebang of it.
Mm-hmm. It isn't like make or break it. Yeah.
I want to confess to you a fantasy that I've been having over the last couple months. And it's not really, it's like a half developed fantasy. Sometimes I'm just lying in bed, waking up, and I just think, what if I was a Leo? What if I was like secretly in my head, like trans sun sign? And I just, like, imagined that I was a Leo. And how would that affect me and my actions, you know? So, I don't know why. It just, because it doesn't have to be Leo. It could be anything, really. But I don't know. What do you think of that? Like, do you think that this thing of thinking that, okay, I'm a Taurus, so I'm supposed to be, like,
right,
you know, earthy and hedonistic and trustworthy and thick-skulled and kind of dumb, but, like, great-hearted. So, like, do you think that people who get into astrology and over-identify with their sun sign are starting to, like, play the part that they think they should be?
I think that's such a great question and discussion, because I've kind of, like, thought, like, the same thing before, where it's, like, I think that it's such a good question to be, like, okay, but, like, what if I was X? And, you know, I definitely think that there's can be ease in, like, looking at, like, say, like, your sun sign and just, like, kind of playing into it, because then, like, you don't have to figure out in some ways, like, all the shit that you, like, contain within you. It's like, okay, like, well, this is how I'm supposed to respond because I'm, you know, like, say, a Gemini. Like, I'm just going to be this way, you know? And so I think that's, like, sometimes, like, the trap of some of this knowledge a little bit is when it's, like, used as, like, a means to an end versus the beginning of a journey. Because I think something I've been thinking about to myself is, like, so I'm a Cancer, and I also have, like, a lot of stuff in my, like, fourth house. But when so I'm estranged from my family and I don't want kids, and it's like, okay, but, like, all the literature out there is like, oh my gosh, like, their family life is, like, so important, and, like, all they want is, like, all the babies, and it's like, okay, like, that doesn't apply to me at all. And
but also, and family, like, and babies don't have to mean blood relatives,
right,
and
right,
you know, things that come out of your vagina,
right? Definitely. But it, like, started this, like, kind of conversation within myself about, like, okay, like, what happens when, you know, these, like, very basic components of a sign aren't present. And it started to shift it, like you were saying, like, to, okay, it doesn't have to mean, you know, biological, or, like, you know, kids. It can be ideas and just, like, you know, even working with, like, a community and, like, all these different things. So I think it's actually interesting, not only the conversations that come up when it's like, what if I was X, but also, like, the parts of particular energies that you don't inherently identify with, like, you're quote-unquote supposed to, I think bring up really interesting self-reflective conversations.
Well, totally. So you were saying, you mentioned earlier, like, whether we like it or not, like, the sun signs are the introduction to astrology.
Right.
So how would you define a sun sign? Like, where do you think that comes into place in the entirety of the chart?
Yeah, so I see the sun sign as, like, I mean, in, like, more of, like, the classical definition of being, and being a little bit of, like, an embodiment of, like, the ego. But I really like, typically I really like to consider, like, the moon sign before the sun sign, because I see the sun sign as almost being this, like, vehicle for some of, like, the things that, like, the moon sign embodies. And it's, like, kind of, like, if this, like, if the moon sign is almost like this, like, inner glow, like, the sun is kind of almost this, like, prism through which it shines in particular ways, in particular aspects.
That's an interesting theory coming from a Cancer sun sign.
And we have a Leo moon.
Yeah, there you go. Miss Eclipse. So if someone's like, what is that joke mean? Cancer, the sign Cancer, is ruled by the moon, and Leo is ruled by the sun. And, you know, Taurus is ruled by Venus, and Gemini by Mercury. Each of the different signs have ruling planets, which becomes confusing if you're not familiar with chart reading, because then outside of the ruling planets, they also have planets that they'll be connected to. So, like, you could have Leo in your moon, even though Leo is ruled by the sun. It's like your moon was in the constellation Leo when you were born. And so you have the old switcheroo, as we like to call it in the astrology world. Just kidding, I totally made that up.
But, no,
yeah,
I think very funny.
I like to also think when sometimes I see stuff like that, like, just like a force of nature happening there. And I think that for me, I think of myself as a tornado because of Aquarius rising, Taurus sun, Gemini moon. I'm like, that's a tornado. Like, there's a lot of fire and air in my chart. And I'm just like, I'm a tornado. That's what I am. Like, that's what my chart's telling me. And then you're an eclipse, you know, like with having the moon and the sun switching over. And just like, just your own interpretation of how sun signs work. I'm like, that's you though. Like, you're like, you're like ruling from the moon.
I really like the way that you put that. I think that that is actually very fun to be able to kind of create those like metaphorical images based on even just what you're seeing within yourself.
No, totally. I mean, I think that that's also the best way to use something like astrology, because there's all this like math and number and confusing, and you're like, okay, what? Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, the whole idea of saying like Cancer is this crab, and then now, like, because this is like ancient, basically Islander, you know, like people that were in touch with the water and stuff. So they're like, oh yeah, that makes sense to us because we know exactly what a crab's like. Whereas like we have like cartoon ideas for the most part of what a crab's like. So what do we know?
Right.
So I think if you break it down into things that are more familiar, then it's like, that's the easiest way because your brain has already done the wiring for wrapping around a concept like an eclipse, and then you're like, I am like an eclipse, and it goes clink, like that's the poetry of it. It just like clips right into place, and then you're like, that makes sense. It's probably what is stirring your interest in finding these oral histories, these things that would have gone unexposed, you know, and you're like, okay, I need to put some light behind that, or I want to put light behind the magical practices.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to frame not only that aspect, but definitely my like motivation in life is like bringing light to the things that like are a little bit in darkness, and like trying to illuminate people that I don't think they think of themselves as like requiring any sort of spotlight.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think that probably my podcast is pretty much represents a tornado. Like, I'm just like, hey, I can see you. Do you want to come up in the air with me? All right, bye. And then it's just a mess that goes in circles without any really, you know what I mean? Like, this is my lifestyle. I'm a tornado.
I think it's fun. Now I feel like the goal or like exercise for everyone should be like, all right, what, you know, movement of nature. Can you personify yourself as?
I know, and then send me, like, the royalties, everyone. I'll leave my Venmo information in the comments. That's another thing. I feel like people are, I mean, we are capitalists. You and I are capitalists. Mm-hmm. That's our nationality, really. And I think that something that I've seen a lot in, like, living in a capitalist world as, like, a healer, witchy, woo, or whatever the fuck I am. Like, I'm a creator. I'm a healer. I talk to people about their problems. Stranger needs a candy bar. Here you go. Like, I'm just, like, that's what I'm like. And I live in a capitalist society. And if I don't figure out ways to capitalize on myself and my ability to give, then I'm, like, fucked. You know what I mean?
Right,
so
yeah.
It creates this weird environment where I don't know. Like, I'm trying to learn how to be a better capitalist. I finally came to terms with it, you know, in my early 30s after being, like, a little feral child my entire adult life. So I'm just saying, like, I have seen in, like, the community, like, the different struggles that different healers or metaphysical practitioners have gone through in trying to figure out how to come to terms with their gift that they want to offer society and the interest around that and how to monetize it and like how to capitalize on it so they can survive, you know? So, I mean, we can have these like delusional fantasies about tribal culture and like back in the day it used to be like we don't know, like that could have been like one instance, like who knows. Like I think that sometimes we like to think that as a healer, like, our community would take care of us, you know, and, like, but also having to come to terms with how to capitalize in this way that makes sense in a modern world and being able to offer services is something I'm always curious about in talking to other practitioners, because it's something that I always try to figure out what the line is, you know, for myself. How do you come to terms with that?
I think that that is such important discussion, and I really like your framing of it, because I think it's also particularly, not to like divert us too far, but across the return, I think I've also found it really interesting to see this like discussion take place along with this like very intense like manifesting culture, like that you see on like Instagram and stuff. Like you'll be like scrolling through and all of a sudden you'll see this like, you know, little text post and it's like, I declare by this time next year you'll be making like $1 million. I'm like, it's like, okay, like I actually don't want that. And it's like, and so I think the line is definitely that, like, starting with like your needs in many ways, which is like you need to make an income to be able to house and feed yourself and take care of yourself, and like you deserve to be able to take care of yourself. And so living in, you know, a capitalistic society where you have to go capitalize upon yourself, like you're saying, I think the question ends up becoming like, what is what I need? And like even beyond just like the basics, it's not like you have to like calculate down to the dollar, but it's like, what, I think there's a sense of fairness of like when you're offering, that money is an energetic exchange. Because we all capitalize upon ourselves and our time, that money becomes that time and energy. And so I think it's really just making sure that what you're offering through both like your time and your expertise matches the dollar amount that someone is giving you, because they've made that money using their time and energy as well. And so I think it is just like due to how things are structured, like you're saying, I think it's completely fair and reasonable that if you're spending, you know, this time and money or like time and energy for services or writing or like these different things, like you have the right to be able to ask for some level of like monetary exchange. But I think there is often like a line. I think typically like the line comes down to like making sure you're not like exploiting other people's time, like, you know, making sure that you have people.
There's this, this idea that like you're hoodwinking someone because you're like, look at the snake oil I made at the, it's really good for manifesting $1 million next year at 11:11 p.m. You know, so there's like this sort of idea that like, oh, you're a bullshit person if you're like doing horoscope or whatever. And then at the same time, it's like, oh, I'm a therapist. I went to 2 years of community college and got certification. So, give me $100 an hour because I, you know, went to the school and I know it now because I passed the class, you know, so that's worthy of money and accepted by society. And then we have this like other thing where it's like, how legit are you? You know, because there's less certifications because, you know, that's so important in this Satyrian universe of ours.
I think it can be, there's like so many layers to discuss with that. But yeah, I completely agree that it's like, I definitely think it's that it comes from the intention. And I think that it can get hard, not that I'm encouraging certifications, but then it is such an individualistic thing because, you know, I know that there are people and like friends of mine who they've worked so hard to be able to master their craft and, you know, offer these services towards people, like you're saying, that is like akin, you know, to a therapist or other, for, you know, akin to being a doctor in some ways and these different things that like definitely deserve that exchange. But then you have people who just want to put something in a bottle, put a label on it, and like sell it for whatever and make promises based on it, which is like, which is horrible. It discredits everyone in the process, which is so unfortunate.
I think it was also like when we were having this conversation, I feel like we're like breaking and deducing a lot of archetypal ideas of other people and kind of being like, you know, there's them and there's us, and then there's them and then there's us. But I don't know, that's another thing that I'm sure in your podcast too, like interviewing, like, what actually is the story? And then it's really individual by individual.
Yes.
And the mistrust for other, and thinking about, like, you know, someone who has a doctorate and I have no, or whatever, like these theoretical people, I think can be a little distracting. And I think it comes down to, like, maybe feeling mistrusting that we'll be received in the things that we're offering. Or, I mean, even in, like, the competition of, like, no, I'm not like them, that you're saying that, like, if I am, then I'm, like, not going to be accepted. And, you know, there's there's all of these, like, weird ideas, because there's a lot of uncharted territory, even though a lot of the practices are very old.
Yeah, I don't think that there's a better way to say it than that. I think that is, you know, a conversation point that could go on for a while.
Well, we can't. We just can't. I think that, how long have we been on, after all? It's been 33 minutes and 33 seconds. So, we could continue this conversation in another realm and say goodbye to our listeners. Is there anything that you want to say if people want to contact you and hear more about what you're doing? How can they find you?
They can find me on my blog at tadpolemagic.com, where I write about my own personal experiences and offer some exercises with tarot, astrology, and magic in general. And it's also where I store all of the oral histories that I've recorded. And then also you can listen to the podcast I host with tarot reader Gina Wozotsky on iTunes, Spotify, etc. And the name of it is Open Magic. And I'm on Instagram at tadpole.magic. And feel free to contact me, ask questions, say hi, whatever you want to do.
How does someone get on the podcast? Can I come?
Yeah, you definitely can. We actually have, they can either email us at hello@openmagicpodcast.com, and then also on our website, openmagicpodcast.com, there is a little, like, become a contributor, little cute little form to fill out that just gives us, like, the basics of, like, what do you want to talk about, kind of stuff.
Oh, cute. Okay. Well, that sounds fun. I'm definitely going to fill out that form.
Yeah, we would love for you to do that.
That sounds so fun. Okay, well, thank you so much for talking to me on my podcast, and there's so much to think about. So I hope everyone has a good time listening and saying goodbye. I don't know how to close. Okay, I have a question for you, actually, before the last question. How do you say goodbye on your show? I don't know how to do this. Like, I don't. I always get, like, nervous, and I'm like, okay, I don't know. Like, and then I just hang up.
To say goodbye.
I have no goodbye finesse.
We, like, it's funny because we, like, would sit with our, like, little mic recorder, and we would, like, we tried out all these different ways of saying goodbye, because it does, it ends up sounding weird. It's like, see you later, goodbye, and it's like, it just sounds so creepy. So I think you just have to go for it and be like, all right, thanks so much for listening, see you next time.
Yeah, I guess that's a classic.
You just gotta go for it, I think.
I'm just gonna start making animal noises until people stop listening.
There are many different tactics that can be used to close out a podcast.
All right, everyone. It's not you, it's me.
All right, bye.